Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. It is so excellent to be back with our second edition of America's Most Haunted Radio. We are absolutely charged up. We had a great debut last week. It was really fun speaking with Bill Murphy from Fact or Fake. All kinds of scientific concepts to wrap my poor little brain around. It was really fascinating. And by golly, we may be topping that show tonight. We have Michelle Belanger from right here in Northeast Ohio. Can it be? Is it possible? I think it is. We're all here in Northeast Ohio. It is a fascinating thing. And I will now gladly turn you over to my co-host, Teresa Argy, who will introduce our fascinating guest.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Eric. This is Teresa Argy. Last week's show was great with Bill Murphy. Makes your head spin. If you think that your brain was hurting last week, Eric, wait till you talk to Michelle. She blows my mind on a consistent basis. She is one of the most interesting women in the paranormal, one of the most interesting women I've ever met in my life, and I can't wait for you to get to know her a little bit like I do. Tonight, our guest is, of course, Michelle Belanger. Most of you probably know her from her seasons on Paranormal State, but she is so much more than that. Michelle is an energy worker and a psychic vampire who has been studying metaphysics for over 20 years. Founder and head of House Kepuru, Michelle is a much sought-after speaker whose expertise in the realms of magic and psychic phenomena have been featured on various talk shows and television documentaries. She's a recognized expert on gothic and vampire subcultures and a frequent guest on A&E History Channel and many other TV and radio shows. She is the author of Psychic Dreamwalking, The Psychic Vampire Codex, and Haunting Experiences, just to name a few. Welcome, everybody, Michelle Belanger.
Hello, everybody. How y'all doing?
Hi, Michelle. Thanks so much for coming on. This is great. I'm so excited that you're on because I just love talking to you. Some of the books I mentioned, everybody, those are just a scratching of the surface. I was going through my book library, and I have a very limited Michelle Belanger collection. I only have 7 books, so I'm missing a vast majority of them, but they are my favorites, and I always notice that the one that gets borrowed and never gets returned is the Ghost Hunter Survival's Guide, so I've got to track that one down because somebody borrowed it. But thank you so much for joining us. This is going to be great. You're going to blow Eric's mind. He doesn't even know what to expect here tonight.
Well, we can go all over the place from cult history to angels to demons to psychic stuff to anything else in between. So hit me with your best shot.
And other things, besides being a writer and a psychic and an energy worker, which is really fascinating to me, you're also a singer and a songwriter as well. I mean, there's just it's kind of not fair that you have all this talent and some of us have, like, nothing. But it makes you a very interesting person, a very well-rounded person. And we're going to talk a little bit about everything tonight. But we want to see what's been happening with you since Paranormal State is kind of gone off the air. I know that you're still very involved and always very busy and always writing. So what's been happening lately with Michelle?
Well, I've still been, even though we don't do the show anymore, I'm still very close with everybody in the Paranormal Research Society. So I've been working closely with Ryan on a couple of his projects and advising on the development of some of their events and their fan-based stuff. There's a possibility that Ryan and I will be working on a book together, but that hasn't been, like, set in stone or anything. It's just an idea we've been kicking around. We both would love to do some, you know, creative cooperation because there was a good chemistry that we had on the show. I don't know. You learn to kind of, like, really grok somebody when they are leading you around sight unseen blindfolded. You either like them and trust them a lot, or you kind of want to punch them in the nose for, like, walking into walls all the time. And he was really good at not ever walking me into walls.
Now, with Ryan, we heard, I'm sure everybody's aware, that there is some sad news about Ryan. It was announced recently that he has cancer. That's just another one that's become a victim of cancer.
That was
it's very, very sad.
Hardest thing to know about and not talk about. I mean, people have noticed that I've not I've not been doing a lot of interviews, and I've not been very, I'm usually pretty talkative online. Once I was able to, I was afraid I was going to let it slip. I mean, we knew before other people knew, and it was, and what do you say to somebody who develops pancreatic cancer before their 30th birthday?
Yeah. And how is he doing? I mean, is this something that's treatable? Is he really sick? How's his spirits?
His spirits are great, and they caught it very early, almost as if he had people kind of maybe helping him get an idea of what was wrong before the doctor's test totally. He was able to point the doctor's test in the right direction.
Wow.
We'll just leave it at that. So it's really, really early. Usually with pancreatic cancer, they don't catch it until it's, you know, stage two, stage three, and there's not much to do beyond palliative care. His spirits, which with my experience with cancer, I lost my mom to breast cancer. My experience with cancer is it's all attitude. Survival has an awful lot to do with your attitude, especially because the treatments are so brutal. Chemo is no joke. He's still planning on really not slowing down, you know, has book projects and show projects and projects. His projects have projects.
That sounds slightly dirty for some reason.
Only you, Eric. Well, that's good.
Well, I
got to
add something, you know.
Yeah, you know, I think it's great that I think he had a little bit of an advantage having so many people that are connected, so to speak, and, you know, a lot of support spiritually and with the friends around. And I'm sure it doesn't hurt having psychic friends around, too, that can kind of help you out. I know cancer doesn't discriminate. I lost my father to cancer as well, and it just seems to be everywhere. So, you know, people look at somebody and think they're on top of the world. They have everything. But, you know, you never know what tomorrow may bring. So I'm glad his spirits are up. And I'm glad it came out, because now there's just a big outpouring of the community of love and support and positive energy, and I think that'll help. So I know it must have been tough. I always know when something's up with Michelle, when you don't see her too much on Twitter. You can usually follow her word count when she's writing her book. So when she becomes strangely silent, something's up.
Twitter's
Michelle,
like the
I
one
do have
social a networking thing I figured out how to use.
In the brief time I've been following you, you're certainly prolific, and you know, the one thing that Teresa neglected to mention is how intelligent you are. You seem to ooze intelligent.
I did not forget to mention that.
Yeah, you forgot. On a serious note, I'm really interested in your thoughts on how. What is the best approach? And obviously, this is, you know, your opinion on things. So hopefully not putting you too much on the spot. But what is your opinion on what is the best approach to disease? You know, in besides the modern medical treatment, of course, and the age old attempt anyway to maintain the most positive possible outlook, and, you know, all the age-old cliches about laughter being the best medicine and whatnot. I mean, I believe that. But with your other sort of insight into other aspects of the world, or I suppose even other worlds, where does that come into play in treating disease, if at all?
Well, I think first that we should always take advantage of the modern medical miracles that we have at our disposal. We shouldn't ever underestimate or denigrate traditional physical medicine just because we believe in the power of positive thinking or spirit healing or any of that. I never advocate just going with, like, energy healing and then not at all consulting a doctor. I believe in doing both at the same time. And it actually goes back to my mom's experience with cancer. It was, in the late 90s and the early 2000s, when they were just starting to integrate energetic therapies as well. So they were kind of like, I don't want to say experimenting because that implies that they were experimenting on people, but it was more they were looking into the possibility of doing energy work in addition to their regular therapies. And with terminal cancer patients, the attitude was it couldn't possibly hurt. I believe that in the body, mind, spirit triad, we should always address the physical with the physical, but we should never forget to also address our minds and our spirits as well. So while we are pursuing things on a healthy physical level, we should also be cultivating good energy. We should be doing things like Tai Chi or yoga or meditation, any of the meditative techniques that appeal to the person. And then on top of that, also good psychological health, good emotional health. All three of those things interact with one another and are such a tightly wound puzzle that to neglect one is to cause detrimental effects to the others. So we should approach ourselves as a whole being in a holistic perspective.
Well, that certainly makes sense to me. Hey, if you don't mind, we have a caller from the 804 area code, and I wonder if we might just briefly check in with them. They've been on hold for some time now, so let me do that if that's okay. Caller from 804, are you there? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
I promise I won't bite.
Hello? Caller from 804, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes, what's your name?
My name is Hugh, I'm in Virginia.
Okay,
hello.
Do you have a question for Michelle?
I was wondering if she does investigations, because I've had quite a few bizarre experiences throughout my life. A lot can be documented, everything including UFO, paranormal, near-death, and spirituality that runs through my whole life.
I've been doing consulting as kind of a special favor for friends like Teresa and Kathy, if they've got something and they need to kind of pick my brain. I will say that I took, what is it now, like since we left the show in January 2 years ago now, I kind of needed to take a break. There was a psychic and an emotional toll to going into places without any expectation of what was going to be there, blindfolded. And I kind of face-planted into a really unpleasant suicide. And so the answer is not exactly. I probably am getting back into it, but recently I needed to take a break, get some space, kind of get my legs back under me and feed my soul for a little while.
Well, I understand. I'm looking just to get this information out. I'm dealing with it, but it's quite fascinating.
You can definitely, check in with us. Our contact information is readily.
I don't use email. If you see my phone number, if you can call me, then I'll give you some things to pull up from the internet. Every time I do that, all people keep saying is, wow.
Well, we will figure out how to communicate with you. If you could now, by saying you don't use email, you mean you really don't use email ever, no matter what?
It's by choice. I'm a visionary, and it interferes with my creativity, so I prefer not to use it. I do have people on occasion that will help me, but if I give my last name, it may be of interest to your listeners too. It's not the heavy duty paranormal stuff, but there's something quite fascinating.
I'm a firm believer that our understanding of all of this stuff is only enriched if everybody shares their experiences. So I'm pretty sure that, they can...
I have a lot of synchronicities that are quite bizarre, too. My full name is Hugh, H-U-G-H. The last name is Trawlsen, T like Tom, R-A-U-L-S-E-N. If you put a .com after it, it will bring you to a site. If you click on historical articles, there's a front page Wall Street Journal article where I exposed the former federal government bureaucrat for fraud indirectly. It eventually resulted in the resignation of Jim Wright from Speaker of the House, the third highest office in the country. The original memo and attachments are there. There's also a letter from President Obama to me related to the economy, and this ties in with other things related to the paranormal and whatever, but this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Wow. Well, those are some big names.
Yes. Well, as I say, when you have a chance to speak with me, I'm just looking for people to investigate, because I'm working on a huge paradigm of bringing spirituality into global economics and combining it with unconditional love, and that's...
Could you give us the URL of your site one more time, please? Which was your name?
Just My name, Hugh, H-U-G-H.
Yes.
Last name is Trawlson, T like Tom, R-A-U-L-S-E-N like Nancy. If you put a .com after, it'll bring you to the site I just mentioned. Just click on historical articles. My last name also has global recognition. I'll give an interesting site of the church that I was married in. That's the letters smwa.org. It's a church in Bayside, New York, that has miraculous photos that still occur to this day from even from back in 1970. There was a seer by the name of Veronica Lucan, and she's
saying, all really, really awesome stuff. I think that we should probably just when we're done with the interview, go and check out the site.
Yeah, also you'll see an interview. I didn't get into it heavy duty, but I did an interview with Father Michael Sherbert, a Catholic Orthodox priest. He has a good bead on what's going on with me, too, and he does a lot with paranormal and has a blog talk radio show, too. So
can you tell us in a nutshell? We don't want to take too much time away from Michelle.
I'll let you go. You have my contact information. Just call me anytime. If you don't get me, leave word, and I'll get back to you.
Well, is there something that you think would be of your experience that would be particularly relevant, to this show? Is there a quick story you can tell? Is there a book you can leave?
There is some things going back in the 80s. I used to live up in Brewster, New York, and I had a UFO encounter. The Hudson Valley sightings, there's some reenactments that are pretty accurate on YouTube. And I was working at Union Carbide's World Headquarters at the time as a contract security officer and going into work right at the main gate at the 11:07 shift, 11 at night. One of these big triangular ships as big as a football field came over treetop level right over the top of me. And I wasn't afraid of it. I sort of felt euphoric and waved at it. But I don't know if it was that I have always had it, but I have a heightened awareness, and that helped me with the individual eventually that I exposed in the front page Wall Street Journal article, who came and visited me. And when I was taking him back to the airport so he could fly back to Washington, there were just the two of us in the car, and telepathically the word evil came into my mind. And I said, what the heck is this? And then I started getting a better bead on what he was all about, and that really helped me. And I had another similar circumstance.
Got an hour show here, though, guys.
Yeah.
We got an hour show.
That is some amazing stuff, Hugh, and we will follow up with that.
Thank you
very much for the call. Very interesting stuff. There's a world of interesting people out there. We will follow up, and thank you very much, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you again.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Now, Michelle, he did bring up an interesting thing that people may not know, bringing up the Catholic Church. People may be surprised to know that you were not always raised in this sort of a culture, that you had a similar upbringing to me. And why don't you tell people who don't know what happened? Something happened to you when you were a child that kind of it kind of propelled you into this life.
Well, I was raised Catholic, and I'm going to say Irish Catholic. Sorry.
Are you there?
Uh-oh, I think we might have lost her.
Oh, okay. Well, I heard the siren.
Uh-oh.
I heard a train or something, and then she said, uh-oh, and she was gone. Well, I hope it wasn't Hugh.
Uh-oh.
I'm sure she'll call back. Hey, one of the things I wanted to talk about, because we really didn't get into it a whole lot at all last week, is our book. I was talking before we went on the air with Michelle a bit about it. And, this is something we're really excited about. This is the foundation of our whole America's Most Haunted brand, which is now a radio show, and soon to be, we thought it'd be up by now, a website. You can go there and see the splash page and whatnot, but our developer's been ill, so we're having to wait a day or two more for that to come. But we're really excited about this book. Oh, here is Michelle. And what it is, briefly, in the briefest of nutshells, is we are picking, for volume 1 anyway, the 10 most haunted locations in the United States. And then we are attempting to kind of cover all the bases. We're attempting to approach the stories that come from those places with a real eye toward journalistic and investigative techniques and standards. We're trying to be real serious about it. Yet, on the other hand, we are telling those stories, and we're trying to tell those stories in the most entertaining and fun manner. And wherever possible, we're doing original investigations of those locations. And then kind of most interestingly on some levels, is then we are reaching out and talking to people such as Michelle. Are you back, Michelle?
I am. That was really strange, and I apologize. We had the X-Files conversation, and then the phone just randomly dropped. I've got five bars.
We heard a train whistle. You say, uh-oh, and then it was silent.
It's that whole Irish Catholic thing you started talking about.
Yes, you were mentioning the Irish Catholic.
I know. I was talking about the fairies and the little people, and apparently they took exception to it. More likely, user error. I just always blame user error. Me and electronics don't get along. But I was raised Irish Catholic, and there's a fair amount of mysticism in any kind of Irish family that's Catholic. But I was born with a congenital heart defect, and I had two open heart surgeries and several other surgeries before the age of five, and did die. Actually, they didn't catch the problem right away. So the way they discovered the problem is I went into cardiac arrest at 6 months, had an open heart surgery shortly after that, and then had the major final try to fix everything in the baby that's got 5 years to live when I was four and a half. So my life expectancy, they didn't expect me to live past five. I did have near-death experiences. The funny thing was, when I tried to confirm this with my mom, I was like, "Hey, Mom, did I die on the table?" And she's like, "Which time, honey?" Which I'm not sure was exactly what I was prepared to hear from her, but bless her heart, she had about as much tact as I have, so I do come by it honestly.
So was there residual effect? Do you have any memories of that, of those experiences?
The very, very early one, I do have probably, because of the trauma involved with all of this, I have more memories of the hospital than I probably would have if it wasn't so intense. And they're somewhat disjointed, so I don't, you know, run around saying I, you know, went down a tunnel and saw white light and met Jesus or anything like that. But my mother certainly believed that those early experiences contributed to the level of weird that I exhibited. Now she was the first person to admit that I was a pretty weird kid to start off with, precocious at the very least, and
I bet you were tall.
I was teeny. You got to understand, my heart problem was supposed to make me retarded and stunt my growth.
Oh my!
And the joke is, you know, one out of two ain't bad because I'm 6'1".
Well, that's tall.
And short Michelle,
my family,
some, though.
In Michelle's family, she had this was something. See, I grew up in an Irish Catholic family too, and whenever I brought home a book or talked about anything supernatural, paranormal, I was sent off to confession. Michelle had a little more support with her family, and had some interesting relatives that kind of shared her gift and her vision, which is. I'm so jealous. I mean, I just remember being told I was a freak and I was going to hell and just all sorts of horrible stuff.
It was ambivalent. My grandmother was very open about her own experiences behind closed doors, which was an aspect that I didn't understand at the time. Like, it frustrated me that she was willing to talk about seeing spirits, and she would have visions of the future. She often had dreams of things that would come to pass. One that was very traumatic for her, that like she prayed to have the gift taken away because of this, was there was when she was a girl, they had a family friend named Mr. Black who lived down the street, and she had a dream, which didn't feel like a dream at the time. She felt that she woke up in her room and she saw Mr. Black walking down the hall, and he paused at the door and said, "Goodbye, Mary Jane." And she looked at the clock and noted the time. And then went to the house to look for him and couldn't find him. And it turned out that he had died in his sleep around that time that night. So a fairly common deathbed visitation, but she was really traumatized by seeing, because the way she said, you know, it's never good stuff. For her, it was never good stuff. She seemed to tune into deaths and tragedies, and that was traumatic for her. And I think it contributed to the ambivalent attitudes she had toward it. Now, my mom, bless her heart, my mom was a hippie art student getting shot at Kent State. So if anybody's not familiar with Northeast Ohio history, I mean, she was running around at Kent in the early 70s, and she was very much a free spirit, a sculptor and a painter and a musician. My childhood, she would play her violin and practice Vivaldi and play the William Tell Overture when I was riding on my rocking horse. I mean, that's so definitely a lot of my other talents, my artistic stuff, you know, that stuff was definitely encouraged. You know, I do think some of it's genetics, but I had a great environment where I was encouraged to explore anything that fulfilled me.
A creative environment. Very creative,
yeah.
It sounds like.
And it didn't quash my intellectual pursuit of my abilities. I have had experiences since I was very little. I had perceptions of spirits at the point where I didn't understand that that's what I was looking at. One of the more notable ones being at the Hinckley Library with the Lady in Blue, who is a haunting that several people experienced there when they were renovating the old house to become the library in 75, 76. At the time, and if I look back at the memory, I did not conclude that this was a dead person. I didn't conclude that she was a spirit. There are some things about the memory that don't make any sense, but since I was 4 and a half, because it was the summer of my final heart surgery, it didn't occur to me that these things were nonsensical. She was in a room, and I was in the doorway, and there wasn't another doorway where she could have disappeared, but she did disappear when I turned away from her and turned back. I just assumed she found a place to hide. I mean, you know, four-year-old logic.
Mm-hmm.
As I got older, I learned that not everybody had these experiences. I mean, in my family, my aunt, my mother's sisters talked, at least two of them talked kind of freely of experiences. And like I said, my mom, my grandmother. When I reconnected in my 20s with my maternal grandfather, I also found that our family are like the tea leaf readers and the psychics and we're always the resident freaks in the neighborhood. And he was kind of proud, like he wore it as a badge of pride and honor, and felt that it was a part of our heritage as Bellangers. And he had some very curious, almost bloodline of the Holy Grail kind of theories as to why. And that I'm not quite sure what I think, but it has given me a fascination for the idea of like the Nephilim and the Watcher Angels, because my last name means beautiful angel, Bellange.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Interesting.
And you know, that's just another, bringing up the Watcher Angels, that's just another one of your projects. You developed a tarot deck with Jackie Williams. Beautiful, beautiful. And that last time I talked to you, Michelle, in person, that was the book that I was struggling with, because I was getting so into it, the guidebook to the Watcher Angel Tarot. And it was so fascinating to me. And again, this is stuff that I had knowledge of, but I didn't have a great knowledge of, because it was so discouraged and I was so it was so belted into me that this stuff was all evil and this was bad and this was occult and this was terrible, which as a Catholic was so confusing, because, you know, Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, that's the way I was raised. Our whole faith is based on this. And I find it fascinating that your family background and the way that the creativity was encouraged, where it was kind of squashed in me. But these are just some aspects of your personality and the things that you can do besides writing and creating and music. And when I first became aware of you, it was your interest in the vampire subculture. And you're like the expert in vampires, it seems. And you've written several books on that. And also, she also writes fiction as well as nonfiction too. It just covers every aspect of it. But let's talk a little bit about your vampire background and that culture, and then we'll get into a couple more of your books.
Well, my identity as a vampire is actually indivisible from my identity as a psychic. There are many different flavors of psychic, types of psychic. There are psychics who tune more into spirits, and there are people who are psychic who tune more into seeing the future and having visions. There are psychics who are more empaths. They tune into people's emotions. And a psychic vampire is someone who is tuned into vital energy, mainly people's vital energy. There's a little bit of empathy there because they do tune into like the emotional content, information that's carried on that energy. But a psychic vampire is somebody who, in addition to their ability to sense and manipulate and connect with that energy, for one reason or another, and there's many theories, probably as many theories as there are vampires, as to why. But for one reason or another, a psychic vampire needs to regularly and actively take that energy in from others. Now, I would say that the great bulk of people who are psychic vampires have no idea that they are, and they are just unconsciously taking energy from people and putting themselves into situations that will become very emotionally, very heavily charged in order to get the best energy. And it'll usually go one of two ways for the people who are unconsciously vampirizing folks. They'll either be aggressive, dominant personalities who get like right up into a person's space and find a way to, you know, literally suck the life out of them by inciting arguments and just, you know, leveling that person's ego. Or they are more the oh poor me. Everybody's got a great Aunt Edna who doesn't really leave the house a whole lot, and she just, you dread having to go over because you know that you're going to have 4-hour-long conversations with Aunt Edna about her aches, her pains, her bowel movements, and her corns.
And they literally suck the life out of you when you're talking to these people, and I think people are unaware of it. You know, and you think that you're, maybe they're just bringing you down because of their mood, but, I mean, we've all experienced this. You're like, oh, my God, I just need to get away from this person. You know,
that's,
but it's not,
I believe,
negative.
Fascinating. Amazing.
The mood, the emotion,
a lot,
all of it.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Aunt Edna, great Aunt Edna, doesn't leave the house a lot, so she's not cultivating good energy. She doesn't have healthy energy. She probably sits on her chair and just sits for 12 hours a day watching TV, so she's got horrible energy. She's not going out among people to replenish it in a way that is natural, because we all exchange energy. Every time we talk with someone, every time we have a meaningful interaction with another human being or just with the natural world, there is an exchange of vital energy. You go for a walk in the woods, you go and sit by a stream, and that energy that the Chinese traditions call qi, you work with it in Tai Chi and in martial arts. In yoga, it's called prana. In Reiki, it's ki. It is a fundamental part of our health and well-being. It is more than physical, but it is intricately intertwined with our physical health, our emotional health, and our spiritual health. Psychic vampires, there's some breakdown in how their body either processes, creates, or connects with natural sources of energy that would ordinarily replenish or support another ordinary person. And if you figure out what it is, that this is something that you need to do, and you find a way to engage in it consciously, with intent, you can choose situations where it is healthy. You can choose to reach out to the energy of people while you are on a stage performing, because there is ample amounts of energy in a concert hall. Anybody who's ever acted in like theater where you are actually on a stage and you have an audience and there is that direct interaction between you and other people, you feel that energy. It's part of our language, it's part of our daily experience, and we never think of it as something that's psychic or mystical because it's actually so very natural to everybody. It's when you walk up to somebody and you just don't like the way they feel, when you walk into a house or a haunted house and there's just some vibe, it feels heavy or something, and you can't put your finger on it, and that's energy. That's all it is. It's everywhere. It is a fundamental part of our experience of the world.
Fascinating. What percentage of people do you think are psychic vampires of the two kinds, of either of the two kinds you mentioned? Or is it something that's more like a sliding scale? Are people?
It would be a sliding scale. I would place myself on the high end of vampiric people in terms of like how much I need to engage and work with that energy. some people will become vampiric for a limited period of time, like a chronic illness, and, you know, for one reason or another, they can't replenish their energy naturally, and they will sort of start, you know, grazing off of the people around them, consciously or unconsciously. Chronic illness definitely does it when, you know, your system's been worn down. They're not necessarily vampiric from birth. There are most of the people who identify as vampires feel that this is, they were born this way. This is fundamental to who they are. How they embrace it and integrate it into their personality varies. And, you know, you may find somebody who is like the fluffiest white lighter who, if you actually get them talking about it, you will find out that this is a natural way that they interact with energy. You know, they're not all goth. They're not running around with capes and fangs and eyeliner.
So some do.
Not to say, yeah, no, some do. And they're, well, that's
I used
thing,
to DJ
is,
a gothic music night, so I know how that goes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Well, come on. I mean, the bands that I've sung in
yeah, I know
are gothic,
the name.
Gothic.
I know
bands,
those names.
And dark metal bands. So, yeah, I'm a goth. My identity as a vampire is not, you know, necessarily tied to it. But I will say that the gothic aesthetic appealed to me because at the time that I was coming to my identity as a vampire, I mean, first of all, there's that word. There is no better word in the English language for somebody who feeds off of life energy, one way or the other, than vampire. But then there's all this baggage that comes with the word vampire. I mean, you've got the sleeping in coffins and the undead, and you've got Bela Lugosi, and these days you've got sparkly boys with bad bedhead.
Well, and of course, the central matter of drinking human blood.
Which is a fundamental part of the vampire archetype in a literary sense, but there are an aspect of the vampire community, the modern vampire community, who are blood drinkers, and they are kind of split into two camps. There are people who drink blood as kind of a token element, a focus, if you will, for the vital energy that they are taking. So the blood is more a symbol for them.
Almost
and
like
then there
communion.
Are those, yeah, kind of. I don't know if they necessarily, few of them make it quite as religious. It's more that body, mind, spirit thing, where rather than simply taking someone's energy, they also want to have that very personal part of the exchange. But at the same time, then there are sanguine vampires, blood drinkers, who completely don't believe in any of my woogity psychic stuff. Like, they think that's crap. Like, any of this mystical mumbo-jumbo is just nonsensical. They tend to be agnostic.
They're just blood suckers, man.
Yeah, no, they feel that there is a real medical thing that they get out of the blood. I will admit, I have a hard time completely understanding their identity, like the way they feed. But to be fair, they think that the psychic vampires are whack-tacular freaks anyway. So we try to agree to disagree on our methods of feeding.
I love that word, whack-tacular. I have not heard that before. Hey, I should mention, excuse me, I'm forgive me for jumping in here. The chat room is not working, and I know that's something that happens from time to time because it's a plug-in and this and that and this and that. So if you're frustrated by trying to get into the chat room, it doesn't exist. And as
I'm on the chat room.
What, you have the chat room?
I'm in the chat room. Yeah, I got a question right here from Michelle. I'm getting
well, then
the chat
why can't
here.
I get in?
Because you're Eric.
I'd bring up my Twitter, but I'm afraid I'd like hang myself up again.
We do have a caller. I'm not sure how to best handle it, but what I was going to do is, if the chat room was in fact not working, which I guess I take back, I'm an idiot. I was going to, you know, give the phone number, but please do tell us the question and or any info from the chat room, and then perhaps we can check in with our caller from 720.
All right. We got a question for you, Michelle. What are your thoughts on mental illness and the paranormal? It's kind of vague, but I think you know what they're going for.
It is a complicated topic. It's really hard sometimes to draw a distinct line because some people who are psychic also have emotional problems and also have, you know, psychological issues. And I think that it is an oversimplification to assume that anybody who perceives things or thinks that they perceive things beyond the norm is a victim of magical thinking in the schizotypal sense, in the sense that they're crazy, to put it in common parlance. But at the same time, it is a good idea to rule out underlying psychological issues. Mental illness still has a huge stigma in our culture. And the fact of the matter is if you really look into, like, the diagnostic statistical manual, and if you take a couple of psych courses, you'll find everybody's got problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line definition of a mental illness really comes down to whether or not you can functionally engage in society, if you can live your life. If you can live your life, you're just quirky. Doesn't mean that you probably don't need therapy. Actually, in my opinion, everybody would benefit from a little therapy. Therapy is really just about learning to know yourself better and understand why you do the things that you do. That said...
And learning to talk
someone,
about how you really feel, not hiding it, not burying it,
yeah,
having a place
I'm,
to go with it.
I'm a Jungian, psychologically speaking.
I am
really
too,
believe that coming to understand who you are and how you function, that mystical journey is a necessary human journey. Like, we need to get to a point where we don't lie to ourselves about who we are and what we want. And a lot of
unhappiness. I am fascinated by Jung's collective subconscious. I find that to be something
dude,
that makes an
I am,
awful
I'm
lot
totally
of
getting off topic, but if you can lay your hands on a copy of the Red Book, which is Jung's journal, his hand-illustrated, hand-lettered journal of his own personal journey, it is amazing, absolutely amazing. It was held from release by his family for many, many, many years. It was like the holy grail of anybody who's into Jungian psychology when I was still an undergrad. And it reveals so much about how we are connected by myth and image and symbolism. And if you really delve into Jung's teachings, you will find why I see almost no difference between psychic and psychological, and how intent and your mental state and your perceptions of the world are all so thoroughly intertwined that it's almost foolish to mystify this to a point by giving it the language of psychic that implies that only certain people are, because everybody's wired in to this stuff. Everybody has it living inside of them. It's just a matter of pulling back the curtain and looking with an unjaundiced vision at it.
Who would have thought you are so incredibly sensible?
A pet peeve of mine are the starry-eyed psychics who don't know how to talk about how their own head works. I mean,
well, everything you've explained
haven't to think about it
makes perfectly good sense. And I had no idea, I have to admit, I was not, you know, I was not prepared for where you were going to go with the
vampirism,
and it makes perfect
people
sense.
People hear vampire and they think I am a flaming loon, and it's just because they haven't bothered to listen to what I'm saying.
Amazing. Really interesting. I will, absolutely. It's a while now because I'm getting up there. I'm older than either of you. But one of my majors was philosophy, and I just found Jung to be explained so much, and I connected with him or his thinking so much more than the Freudians, you know, the more deterministic side of things. And
God, yeah.
I find it amazing. Well, why don't we try our caller from 720, since, by golly, we only have 16 more minutes. It is amazing how time flies when you're talking with interesting people. Caller, 720, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you, yeah.
Hey, Michelle, it's Juliana and Jessica May, and we had couple questions. Hi, yeah,
hello.
We had a couple questions. What?
Please do, go ahead.
Okay, we were wondering if you have any ideas of how to better work with energy over long distances, and what you can tell us about other kin and why we should be careful with their energy.
Well, first, energy over long distances, at least what works for me, because I am a very hands-on kind of person, is something that allows you, some focus that allows you to hone in on the person. It can be an item that has their energy attached to it. And understand that I'm going to say an item that has their energy attached to it, but an item that you strongly associate with them works just as well, because the psychological cues are allowing you to more or less trick yourself into thinking that they're there, that there's a part of them attached to you. And it's either of these work, and they're essentially more or less the same thing. Something that allows you to focus better on the person, because, you know, body, mind, spirit again, it's not just your mind, it's not just your energy, your body, engaging your physical senses helps. So if it's something that you can look at or touch or hold to help yourself focus and ground further in your connection, that is ideal. And again, it's playing a little bit of energy work and psychology all rolled up in a neat little ball. So if the idea of psychic vampires wasn't weird enough for the listeners, otherkin are another community of people that have been going through their awakening and their building of their identity. And they're essentially people who feel that on some level their spirit or their energy is not entirely human. And there's a whole wide range of how that plays out. And for folks who've been swimming in the sea of the paranormal for as long as I have, this will remind you of a talk in the 70s about starseed and people who are walk-ins and different language, same concept. I'm not totally human in my skin is really what it comes down to. The idea with that and energy work is that sometimes not everybody's created equal, or I should say not everybody is built the same. And so different energetic systems may respond differently to different situations. So while we may all wear the flesh and the form, the way in which we respond to things is not 100% identical. And you don't even need to be otherkin for that to be true. Everybody has different levels of sensitivity. A lot of learning how to do energy work, learning to cultivate your psychic senses, and learning to develop any of this is learning how things work for you specifically. There is no one book out there that will tell you how to cultivate these, because the book, and it's the bitch of it, but the book is inside you. Each person has their own symbol set, their own unique set of rules, and you only learn it by trial and error. So in the case of your friend, the reason why her identity as otherkin is important to energy work is it may mean that her system processes energy differently. There are different vibrations, for lack of a better word, that she will be more tuned to than others. She may be hypersensitive to things that an ordinary person or a non-otherkin person can shrug right off. And it will, I can sum it up like this, individual results may vary.
Now, Michelle, we've talked a lot tonight about energy and how it permeates through everyone's life, actually, whether you're psychic, whether you're a paranormal investigator, whether you're a mother, whether you have crazy Aunt Edna at your house. It all comes down to energy. And what I have found very helpful as an investigator and a researcher myself, especially after becoming friends with you, is your work on energy, and especially when it comes to paranormal investigating, with grounding and centering and shielding, which I think every investigator needs to learn to do. And you say there's no one book out there, but I think people who are familiar with your books would absolutely understand. I was in Alabama a few weeks ago, and I hooked up with a team from Alabama, and we went on an investigation, and this woman started using all these Michelle Bellanger techniques. And I just started laughing, and she's like, what are you laughing about? And I'm like, you're one of the few people I know who know these techniques outside of Ohio. And she's like, well, I'm a huge follower of Michelle Bellanger. I don't go on any investigation without reading her books first. And I thought it was great. But these places that Eric and I are covering in our upcoming book, this America's Most Haunted, these are the techniques that I use, and there a lot of them are covered in the Ghost Hunter Survival Guide. And if there's one book out there for people who are interested in paranormal investigation and you want to get a little bit more knowledge of this energy work and how it can affect you and how it can help you, that's the book to pick up, because the way the book is sectioned out is just brilliant, especially for people who don't like to read too much. They can
Because some people will hear energy and they think that that is, means that they have to give up their religion or that they have to change their religion. And that's not the case. You can believe in God, heaven, hell, the flying spaghetti monster, but energy is just about part of your ordinary human experience of the world, and it can fit into any of those. And I wrote the Ghost Hunter Survival Guide with the diversity within the paranormal community in mind. So there are sections that appeal to skeptics or people who take a more psychological approach to hauntings, people who take a Christian, people who take, you know, pagan, Wiccan, magical. The idea is the energy and our relation to it is the mother tongue, the common language, and it's all about making it speak to us. Grounding, centering, and shielding is something that every investigator should have in their toolkit. You can think of it in terms of a purely psychological technique of grounding. You are getting your feet back underneath you. Centering, you are finding your point of balance. Shielding, you are establishing a boundary around yourself so that things that you do not want to let in to your mind, your emotions, or your reality do not pass that barrier which you have established.
Man, is that sensible.
And
you are disturbing me with your sensibilities.
Come in so handy too, Eric. When you know, you talk about how it doesn't matter what religion. Kathy Weber is my other haunted housewife friend and partner, and Kathy and I like to refer to ourselves as Michelle's Christian friends because, but you know, because you have a little bit of a different path religiously as pagans, but we get along and we still understand where you're coming from and these techniques that you point out, and we use them all the time. When we were at Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, Kathy and I were both taken back by the energy in there, and we both had to step aside and we had to go through that more so than any other place I've ever been. And we were both like grateful that we had those tools, as you said, in our toolkit, because it becomes so important. And also, I think it opens you up a little bit more too to the experience. So I think it's an invaluable tool, and anyone can use it. It doesn't matter what your religious beliefs are or how much you are into paranormal investigating. Once you have a bad experience with something, as I did years and years and years ago, I think that you will try anything that will help you along. And I think that, Michelle, your books are invaluable. And, you know, I just happen to be lucky enough that I've also know you in person. And so I've been around when you've investigated. And I'm telling you, it's really incredible. And everybody should get a chance to go through these books and read them. And if you're ever going to any haunted location, especially one of these so-called super haunts, these are things you really do want to have handy. You really want to know what to do, and anybody can benefit from them.
Yeah,
down and dirty
I'm fearful of down, people oh. just jumping willy-nilly.
Oh, my God. So, some of the places that people, and they might not realize that they're sensitive, and then they're like, oh, my God, I went there, and now I have this crazy headache, and it won't go away, and I don't know why I feel so sick. And they'll just feel like spinning around. Down and dirty technique. If you're in a space and you're feeling overwhelmed and it is starting to make you feel dizzy or sick to your stomach or whatever, remove yourself from the space. If you can't remove yourself actually from the house or the location, find the bathroom, go to the bathroom, close yourself in the bathroom, turn the water on in the sink and run your hands under the water. And as you are running your hands under the water, picture all of the icky stuff that's making you feel like crap as something that you are washing off your hands down the drain. Focus on the sensation of the water. Allow that physical sensation to anchor you to your body while you are doing it. And you don't have to think of it in terms of energy or anything wiggity or weird. Just think of it as good psychology. You are releasing the stuff that is making you feel bad. And at the end of the day, I don't care if you want to call it psychosomatic, that by this set of symbols and symbolic actions, you are convincing yourself that you feel better and therefore you feel better. I don't care how you think of it. If the end result is that you feel better, that is all I care about.
If it works,
exactly.
It works. Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%.
Nothing wrong with a placebo if a placebo works.
I don't think it's supposed to be open.
And then we can leave it to our, you know, I personally I don't, but I think that the extended conversations we can have as to why it works and how it works, while interesting and deeply engaging, are irrelevant in the moment where the person is in crisis.
Because what matters is what works. It's
what matters at that moment is to get the person to a point where they can functionally handle their environment.
Well, your advice is extremely practical and, as I said, really quite startlingly sensible. It's amazing stuff. As Teresa said, gosh, now I can't believe it's already 55 minutes ago. I absolutely am looking forward very much to meeting you in person. You're very, very interesting and very intelligent and obviously function on many levels. And yet, unlike a lot of people I've talked to who seem to be kind of multi-leveled, you seem to have been able to kind of pull them all together, as you've also mentioned, using the word holistic. You know, that does seem to apply to you personally as well.
I like to think that I've done a pretty good job with my personal path for developing that, yeah.
Well, that is nothing to sneeze at. And by golly, there's some books I need to get, especially
the Ghost
Handbook
Survival Guide
for novices.
The Ghost Hunter Survival Guide, yeah.
Because I'm a novice, and I'm really interested in this. I'm coming at it more from the journalistic and from the media standpoint. I started doing, for my writing, for my website, I started doing interviews with the various TV stars of the paranormal shows, and it was really, you know, honestly, more that they were TV stars than that they happened to be on paranormal shows. But the more I did those interviews, the more fascinated I became with it, and I realized all these people, there's certain commonalities in how they approach things and think about things, but, you know, there seem to be more differences than similarities in terms of, you know, if they're religious, they're not religious. Some are just hardcore atheistic. You know, most of them have some form of spiritual belief of one kind or another. But, you know, it became really interesting to me. And the more I've gotten into it, I suppose still primarily interested intellectually, but I can certainly feel myself being pulled into it too. So I don't want to be one of these people who finds himself in over his head without being properly prepared.
What I love about the paranormal community, and some people will laud the television shows and some people will decry the effect that they have on serious investigation. For me, anything that encourages dialogue, that gets people talking about the things they're not sure about, and encourages them to be open about things that they might have felt embarrassed to talk about before. I'm a firm believer that the universe, you want to call it God, religion, spirituality, or just our collective understanding of the world we live in, is a multifaceted jewel. Not everybody has the same perspective of that. Everybody's seeing different pieces of it. The only way for us to see the whole thing, or to even get an inkling of the whole thing, is if we all talk about what it is we experience and what our perspective and perception is. And if we can agree to not argue over the differences, once we see what we have in common, we will have a deeper understanding of both ourselves and our world.
And that brings us back to that, to the Jungian subconscious, the collective subconscious, that we are all connected at a level that is difficult,
astounding
to approach, but certainly not impossible.
I think scary for some people.
Sure it is.
Amazing for others.
Because it transcends themselves, and people are afraid of things that are outside of themselves.
And people are afraid of things that they don't fully understand. And I've just learned to accept the fact that I don't understand many things and just try to get a grasp on it the best I can. The book that I'm reading right now, Michelle, is Psychic Dreamwalking. And if there was any ever a scary topic in the paranormal, it's the thought of somebody coming into your dreams willfully, which at first it was daunting when I started reading it. I was like, oh, my goodness. And then I thought I would never be able to develop the technique, but you're so good in your writings about letting people, getting to the core where they can understand it and making them feel comfortable and encouraging them to do it. I think that's another one of your fascinating books. That's the one that I'm currently reading.
Freaky
There's
is the
one
fact
for
that
Eric.
I was in fourth grade with other fourth graders when we were experimenting with that.
That's
to give you
yeah.
some perspective.
That's a slumber party to remember.
as a nearly 40-year-old, now I'm like, oh my God, there are 10-year-olds out there that are probably experimenting with things like this that will mess their stuff up if they don't have like some support system or some amount of information. I mean, we were playing with fire.
mm-hmm.
We really, really were. But yeah,
you Freddy Krueger's you.
The realm of dreams is, again, takes us right to Jung. Dreams, the collective unconscious, the mythic imagination, that otherworldly realm that exists on the edges of our known reality and our known consciousness, the betwixt and the between and the liminal bridges of existence, those are the spaces in which I walk. In another day and age, rather than vampire, I would probably be called shaman.
Boy, there is no better way to end than that. That was quite a sentence you just conjured up. I love that. All right, well, our time is up. And by golly, in some ways, of course, we just really scratched the surface. How fascinating. Teresa was absolutely right. She said I would be amazed and mesmerized and amused and bedazzled, and I am all that. And more. So what a tremendous show. Thank you so much. You really, in a short time, we covered a lot of topics, and many remain, and we'd love to have you back on when you have some time, and we can go over some of these new things. I know you told me before we went on the air that you had something coming together here real quickly. You couldn't quite announce yet.
I can't, but it is big news. It is amazing news, and when I can actually announce it, trust me, I will shout it to the rooftop.
Well, we would love to talk to you about that when the time comes. So please do keep us in mind, and as I said, too, I can't wait to meet you in person. That would be amazing and an honor, and we'd love to talk to you a little bit more, as we said, about the book, because any of the places you've had experiences with, we'd love to share those with our readers, too. So thank you so much, Michelle. Really enjoyed it, and it's just that much more fun that we are all right here in Northeast Ohio. Who would have thought it?
I blame Lake Erie. We live in a freaky area.
Yeah, well, that's why they call it Lake Erie.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Michelle. This has been great, and I know we just barely scratched the surface.
Thanks for the invite, actually. I had a great time.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight, and don't forget to join us next week. We'll announce a guest soon.
Yes, and we'll get better at planning these things out, but we're just getting going here, and we're trying to...
Some days. Spontaneity is good.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. It makes it harder to promote, however, but nonetheless, the value that is counteracted by the fact that these shows are recorded, of course, and they're always available in streaming or podcast form, so they never go away. So that's one of the things I really do like about internet radio is that once it's there, it is there and never goes away. And once we get the site actually up, which, as I mentioned, is supposed to be within a few days here, we're certainly hoping by the end of the week, we will also be putting up a text version of our interviews so that our guests get the full value of them. You know, it's not just audio, but there will be text of it as well.
Oh, heavens, it's been skipping all of them.
All right.
All right.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening. And thank you, Teresa. Great job as always. And we will talk to you all, we hope, next week at 10 o'clock Tuesday. America's Most Haunted. Ooh, good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.